You are tuned in to a fireside chat with Zany Mystic. Join us now on another exciting metaphysical journey. Relax, tune in, drop out, and take a seat by the fire as we explore new realms and possibilities. This is Magenta Pixie. You can find me at magentapixie.weebly.com. But now, here is Zany Mystic and guest. Enjoy the show.
Well, greetings and welcome back. Let's hope you're returning to a fireside chat with Zany Mystic. I'm your host, Lance White. Tonight, my guest is Ben Stewart. Born in Tacoma, Washington, Ben is a filmmaker, musician, and researcher. Raised in remote locations of the Marshall Islands and serving 6 years in the United States Air Force, diversity and culture are a natural interest in his research. Some of the main fields of study include gnosis, spiritual science, suppressed history, the occult, comparative religions, mythology, astrology, numerology, depth psychology, and physics. With leading research from cellular biology, DNA, electromagnetism, and sacred geometry, and he is creating quite a stir in the professional fields. Ben is best known for two of my all-time favorite films, which I hope you have all seen, and if not, you should, Esoteric Agenda and its sequel, Chymatica. The depth and vast scope of these two works has made them standards, which all need to be held to. So let's find out more about Ben now. Hi, Ben. How are you?
Not too bad. Thank you for having me on the show. It's an honor.
Oh, well, thank you. It's an honor to have you. My goodness. You broke so much ground in creating, first, the Esoteric Agenda. You were in your early 20s when you put that together, and I just can't believe how you assembled such a vast compendium of information and put it together in such a way that we can all understand, you know, what's happening it's really a masterpiece.
Well, thank you. The biggest credit must go to all the researchers that helped me along the way, meaning all the ones who have done the work before me, all the authors, the books that I've read, the documentaries that I'd seen before that, a lot of the articles and a lot of the research that I was doing was really synthesized by many other people before me. So really the only thing I can truly take credit for from what you said is being able to put it into a palatable form for other people to digest and understand a little bit more, because all of the hard work and the research was really done before me. So my job was a lot easier in that respect, I should say.
Right. Yes, I hear you. I'm familiar with probably quite a few of the people that you pulled information from, and thank God there are others who have blazed a trail before us and will blaze trails after us, let's hope.
Absolutely.
So tell us a little bit, for those who may not be familiar with Esoteric Agenda, what the main, how can I put this into words? What is the gist of the film? What motivated you? What inspired you to make it? And what do you feel is the most important message that you're trying to convey in that film?
Well, for that film specifically, actually what drove me to make the film, I can't say it was really an accident. It was more of, if it was an accident in any way, shape, or form, it was divine. But I was actually trying to make a music video for the group that I am in. And as I was working on that, on basically just trying to figure out how to do video editing, I figured I would start with a short, maybe 15-minute documentary of explaining some of the lyrics to the band that I'm in. Huh. And from there, what really happened was obviously it turned into what Esoteric Agenda is right now, which isn't a music video at all. So what the intent was of the film, that was the original intent, but once it became a little bit more what you would see as, you know, as the documentary that it is, that intent was really to inform people of the fact that the world is vastly different than the way we typically look at it. I mean, I found it to be more interesting than most movies, how the world really seems to tick when you take a deeper look at it, and that was what I wanted to explore a little bit more. So it was more of a very interesting exploration on my behalf to be able to do the film, because as I was researching it, I was really coming across a lot of this information on my own and finding it to be just a magnificent find. And as I was putting the pieces together, you know, as I said before, there are a lot of researchers that had put a lot of these pieces together, but then the wide scope of the information that goes into Esoteric Agenda I found to really correlate, in a sense that absolutely every facet of our lives are in some way connected, and I really wanted to portray that, and that was why, you know, there's a lot of conspiracy films and a lot of conspiracy books out there, and I didn't just want to touch base on the negative things that you'd find out there. I wanted to also touch base on the things that really just by ineptitude and by complacency we've come to within humanity. And I think one of the biggest things is the misunderstanding of what time truly is and how time is a personal thing. You know, when I got it towards the beginning, when I was speaking about, you know, the Mayan calendar, the lunar calendar and things like that, and how it changed into the Gregorian calendar, really the biggest fault there was the fact that we were complicit with such a change to where we externalized time to being something outside of us. And time is an extremely important facet of our lives. It's a foothold in really the, you know, it's the biggest foothold in our perception of reality that we have. And that was just, you know, one little tiny piece of the bigger puzzle that I was trying to put together for people. But I also, I didn't really see too many people out there, making films, writing books with solutions. So I wanted to really, I wanted that to be the apex of the film, which is why I dedicated a large portion of the end of the film to those solutions, because I saw a lot of people pointing out the problems, but there wasn't a lot of solution talk. And if there was any solution talk, it was very vague in the sense of, you know, well, it's just an illusion, and all you have to do is break the illusion, or, you know, all you need to do is stand together and then, you know, something will happen. I found that to be kind of vague. Mm-hmm. So when I was putting the pieces together in the solution, part of Esoteric Agenda, I didn't want to be so vague, but I also didn't want to make it so specific that people had to follow a certain criteria and guideline. And if that, say, were to fail, then they would be like, oh, well, then, you know, everything Ben says must be kind of crap, because, you know, I tried, you know, I put 2 weeks towards the solution that he gave me and it didn't work. So that's kind of, you know, long story short, what my original intent was with that film.
Well, and I think you achieved that beautifully, because it's so well balanced between, you know, the truth and delving layers beyond what we perceive as reality, and then also bringing it all together and then ending on an extremely positive spiritual note. You know, it's not a doom and gloom movie, and it does leave one feeling that, you know, that there is, that there are tools that we can pursue and that, you know, we can move forward. So I really think it's a film that everybody should see as mandatory. For, you know, it should be shown in high school, actually.
Yeah, let's see if that'll ever happen.
Did you, then how long ago, long after Esoteric Agenda, did you end up doing Chimetica, and how did that one come about?
It was almost immediately afterwards. Really, the reason, as I said, I wasn't planning on releasing a film, actually. A lot of this research that I was doing, I was really just doing because I found it to be interesting. So when I began getting a lot of emails, the first film I actually kind of did sort of anonymous, because I really wasn't trying to make a name for myself. I actually just wanted people to comment on the YouTube videos on the editing skills, which I pretty much didn't have too much of at that time. So I was really just trying to hone in on the editing skills so I could make a music video for the band. But I would say maybe a couple weeks after the film was released, I decided to put some contact info and a website together. And once I did that, then people started getting a hold of me en masse, asking, you know, random questions, telling me that the film really helped them out, helped them have a better, a clearer, you know, perception of what's actually going on in the world. And a lot of them actually kind of spilled some, like, deeper, darker secrets that I won't go into, obviously, because they're personal to the people who sent them to me, but some pretty dark things that were going on, and people saying that it really helped them move past these things. And that was when I really wanted to start taking it a lot more seriously. Not that I wasn't taking it seriously before that, but I decided that if this was going to be going to the public, I really want to make sure that I'm not shortchanging people, and I want to I want to give them as much as I possibly could give them. So I decided to work on Kymatica as of this point. And the reason why Kymatica turned out the way it did was because I really wanted to delve a lot deeper into how we, as individuals, how we become complicit of these, these things that are going on in our world that we want explanations for. But typically what I was trying to show is that Without pointing the finger at other people, saying that other people need to point the finger at themselves, what I wanted to do is try and push the fact that a lot of the reason why people find, because now there's a pop conspiracy culture where it's really fascinating to people to look into these subjects just because it's in some way, shape, or form better than Hollywood, and it's cheaper than Hollywood because you can get it anywhere online, and it's kind of like an interactive thing.
Yeah.
But what I really wanted to do was to show that it shouldn't just be an escape. It should be a reason. It should be a call to action, a lot of these things. So I really wanted to show people that we have the tools within us to actually make a difference. So it's not just something that we find interesting and we want to learn more about the Rothschilds so we can better point our finger. We want to learn more about central banking and learn more about HARP and learn more about chemtrails and all these things so we can better point the finger. I didn't want to contribute to that. I wanted to contribute to people recognizing the problem for what it was and then figuring out, okay, I somehow have my stake in this. I have, in some way, shape, or form, I have been complicit in the past. How can I stop feeding this monster? And that's really what Kymatica was about. So when I was working on that film, I tried to give a good balance between actual specific detailed information and very metaphorical interpretive information. And, some of the specific detailed information was obviously when I was getting into the suppression of certain texts, the way that tribes were suppressed, and, you know, the genocide that happened, because that's something that hits very close to home with me, because I've been studying that for probably almost longer than anything else in this field. So when it gets into situations like that, I really wanted to give a nice balance between the details and the interpretive metaphorical information.
Mm. So you might be talking about the way that the indigenous tribes have been systematically erased so that there's not a record of the way that is communicated with nature. That's the way I interpret it.
Absolutely.
Ancient ways are trying to wipe out the ancient ways so that they can rewrite the history of humanity in a way that is capable of controlling it increasingly without a lot of effort from the top, as I see it.
No, absolutely. That's definitely why I wanted to really hone in on a lot of that information. I actually, in more of my latest research, have actually gone even deeper into why specific tribes were killed off and why other tribes were only taking slaves to actually work the fields. You know, when the Portuguese mariners and the Spanish mariners came over to the Americas and they began colonizing, it's actually very, very interesting. A lot of my latest research, the newest documentary I've been working on is about law. And it's really getting more into kind of what I've shown in my other films about admiralty law, but it actually gets a little bit deeper into those subjects, and I actually trace back through the history of law. And that was where I really started finding some correlations. When you go back through the history of law, you find some correlations between the modern bar association today, that's, you know, the basis for our common law here in America, and the Knights Templar. And then how the Knights Templar were obviously, you know, killed off in the, I guess it was the 1300s. A lot of them were killed off, and a lot of them were forced underground. In France, they were obviously killed off. In England, they were really just, they were brought to trial. Many of them found not guilty. And then, and in Portugal, they actually went from the Templars of Tomar, I believe it was, and they basically just changed the order, the title of the order, into the Order of Christ. And from there, a lot of that money that was originally the in the hands of the Templars, a lot of that money then went into the Order of the Christ. And then from there, the first Grand Master of the Order of Christ was Henry the Navigator, which was the son of King Edward I. And that's when you actually start getting into it. You find out that a lot of that, a lot of those navigators, he's the one who set up the school of navigation, or the school of navigators. And that started the long campaign of all of the mariners finding the new Americas, navigating through that school, which was another form of a, it was in some way, shape, or form a secret society in and of itself, because it trained a lot of the individuals that came over into the Americas. Because then, surprise, surprise, his successor as Grand Cross was Prince Ferdinand. So, and we all know about, you know, Ferdinand and a lot of the a lot of what happened later, or just maybe 100 years later, 100 to 200 years later, over in South America. You know, that's why in Brazil they speak Portuguese. That's why, you know, in Peru and many of the other places they speak Spanish, because of the Spanish and the Portuguese mariners set up through this school. They were funded by the same money that came from the Templars. And that was how that kind of fed into the Americas. But back in England at the same time, what you actually find is right after the Templars had the Inner Temple and the Middle Temple out in London, and there was a temple church attached to it. And that still exists today. When they were kind of forced underground and some of them were accepted into the Knights Hospitallers, this is where it gets into the law that I was looking at. When you trace back law, especially common law, back into England or Great Britain, what you find is that in London, all common law comes from what you hear about, like the Bar Association. We have the American Bar Association. There's bar associations everywhere. Almost every single, in every single commonwealth, you'll find a bar association. Well, that all goes back to the four inns of court in London, which is Gray's Inn, Lincoln's Inn, the Inner Temple, and the Middle Temple, which are these four inns of court that resides in London. And that is where the current form of law all comes from. And that it's the same, the latter two, the Inner Temple and the Middle Temple, is where the Templar actually had one of their main headquarters. So it's kind of interesting how all of this ties back into these ancient conquests, these religious conquests. And that's kind of where my research has been leading me lately. But to stay on point, long story short, when I was doing research during Chymatica on the genocide of all the tribes, it actually directly tied in with a lot of this research that I was doing in the Holy Crusades. Because what then happened, as soon as they started finding not just different religions elsewhere, but some of the most true religions, that some of the most ancient religions were there in what is now today the United States, Canada, Mexico, South America, because in fact, if you look far enough back in time, you'll actually find that ancient Phoenician mariners, well before the time of Christ, thousands of years before the Common Era, Phoenician mariners actually colonized a lot of the places here that eventually were taken over by the Native Americans that we see. So you'll actually find Phoenician and ancient Irish inscriptions on mounds right here in the United States from thousands upon thousands of years ago, which is extremely interesting. So, I mean, when you're looking at history, a lot of things are definitely untold. And a lot of things have been tried. A lot of these things have been tried, have been suppressed and tried to wipe it off the face of the earth in many ways. So that's when you see all the book burnings and all the suppressions of these specific tribes, because there were some tribes that they didn't even care about. There were some tribes that really didn't practice a lot of these ancient forms of mysticism and religion and shamanism, the ancient Magi and the sages. They didn't deal with it. Any other tribes, but the ones that were that had some form of contact with the ancient world of the Phoenicians and beyond that, really.
Interesting. And you know, it's funny because today it seems like there's a renaissance of interest in what the indigenous tribes have to say. And you know, my last guest is an astrologer, and she. A friend Junvalo Melchizedek has a lot of contact with the Mayan elders and the Kogi and the Hopi and so on and so forth. Mm-hmm. And she was mentioning that the Hopi have said that the prophecies have all come true except for the last one, and that had to do with the red sun or the red star. And then she mentioned that there's a star that's going supernova at some point called Betelgeuse. So I thought that was kind of interesting. But more so than that, you've done research in electromagnetics, and there are many of my guests and many quantum physicists as well who are talking about the Earth slowly losing a bit of its gravitational force, and the poles are starting to move around. And of course the indigenous tribes say that this is part of the cycle that happens every 25,600 years, and then there are millions of year cycles, and then there's one that's 16.5 billion years if you follow the Mayan calendar all the way back. And Terence McKenna had his time wave zero theory that kind of dovetails into all that, and it ends at 2012. So have you done much research on that? And another thing too, that many of my guests are going to Peru to have various otherworldly experiences with cactus juice and in Peru and ayahuasca and so on and so forth to find out for themselves what this is all about.
Yeah, it's interesting you mentioned Terence McKenna because he was, I mean, decades ago, he was really in the midst of all of this research specifically with shamanism, and his time wave zero understanding of novelty was really quite interesting. He actually he had some differing beliefs with people, say like John Major Jenkins, even though they were close colleagues. Where Terence McKenna actually believed that it would be a kind of a sudden thing around the turn of 2012. It would be almost kind of like a sudden rapid thing. And John Major Jenkins actually believes that it may have been somewhat of a 36 year span of the whole shift that's what we're actually going through. And but yeah, I mean, as far as everything that actually goes with the electromagnetics with this, it was really difficult to find. It's very easy to find information on electromagnetics. However, it's kind of difficult to find a lot of the information that really, really correlates with some of the questions that I had, because there are definitely what we see is that there are questions of the electromagnetism, the electromagnetic poles of the Earth actually weakening almost to a zero point. And there's other research of it wavering, actually. And when I got into my research of the Schumann resonance of the Earth, it's actually really interesting because there are seven of them. Well, there's actually more than that, but there's I showed in Kymatica there's actually seven of them, and they actually bounce around, and they within themselves, they are vibrations, but they themselves also fluctuate vibrationally. So it's kind of part and parcel to the seven resonances that we have within us, such as, you know, the chakras, and right. also the seven lights, the seven archangels, the seven expressions, the seven Elohims. And what I mean by seven lights, I meant the seven colors that you would get if you were to force white, pure white light through a prism. You get the seven, the whole spectrum, the seven colors. And what's interesting about that is where I was actually getting in, into a lot of the newer work that I've done. If you look at the tree of life, or the Kabbalistic tree of life, you'll have the Ein Sof Or above the Tree of Life, which is that unlimited light. They call it the Absolute. And that light, once it starts its descent through the Tree of Life, it first hits the supernal triangle. And it's interesting that they use a triangle. For one, there's a Trinity there, and you see the Trinity within every single religion. And the Trinity always has to do with creation, maintenance, and destruction, no matter what it is. It always has to do with that creative force. And what's interesting about that is it's above that is Ein Sof Or, and right below it is the supernal triangle of Keter, Chokmah, and Binah. And then below that are seven spheres that go all the way down to Malkuth, which is the kingdom, the physical world. And that right there is one of the most ancient depictions of light with the Ein Sof Or, the unlimited white light, that pure white light being forced through a triangle or a prism, that supernal triangle, and there being seven different expressions. So within those seven lower spheres below the supernal triangle, what you find is those seven expressions within us, which are the chakras, you know, and that was why I got into where you find seven in, there's seven chakras, seven continents, there's the seven Elohim, there's seven endocrine glands within us, and it's really, really interesting. This number seven keeps on showing up in things that are very, very, very relevant to these forces within us. And we actually go back in looking at alchemy, and you see these seven planets, you know, from the moon all the way to Saturn, those seven planets that have seven different metals attributed to them, seven different colors attributed to them. And those aren't just random. It's very, very important to understand how they actually what the occult significance is of all of them. So how this all ties in with electromagnetics is it's all vibration. It's all an energetic force. And so this is when you and I were talking previously about there being agents or disciples of light and agents or disciples of dark. It's really, really interesting because that is the thesis of Kymatica. Kymatica is that dance between matter and vibration, the active principle and the passive principle, the masculine and the feminine. And the one thing that I alluded to, but I didn't actually come right out and say in Kymatica, is that it all comes back to electromagnetics, because there's these three forces. You have the positive force. You know, this is the reason for having an, you know, alternating current. You have your positive, you know, or your active, and you have your passive. And there's that, always that third force that's really the mystery between every trinity that you see. It's always that third force, and that's the equilibrating force. And that's the purpose that you actually see the symbol of the cross. When you look at the symbol of the cross, that is that's electromagnetics. If you look at that right there, you have the vertical line, which is the phallus, which is the male, and then you have the horizontal line, which is the feminine. And the point in which they cross is that sexual union between the two. And those are the three forces. You have the masculine, the feminine, and that sexual union. And that is why every trinity involves itself with creation, because you cannot bring anything new from that unlimited light. You cannot create anything into this physical world without all three forces. You need that sexual union between the masculine and the feminine polarities to create anything new on this planet. And the reason why I get so far into electromagnetics and those three principles, the active, the passive, and the equilibrating, is because if you were to examine consciousness, if you were to examine behavior of individuals or the behavior of societies or the behavior of humanity at large, and not just humanity right now, but through entire epochs or eras, If you were to observe that, they all display the same characteristics of this electromagnetic impulse. It's either the agents of light or the agents of dark, and it's like a chess game. And this is why I use that that chess game allegory a lot, because you have the two different sides, and they're always going to be battling one another. You cannot have just a negative or just a positive force. There has to be a duality, because that is the nature of the Trinity. You are always going to have that duality, but then there's that third force, which is the observer. And this is where it gets really interesting, and this is where all of my work comes into play, is if you look at the Gnostic principles, if you look at the Mayan principles, if you look at most shamanistic cultures, what you'll understand is they always take the approach of exploring the inner depths of yourself to find the principles of the universe. It's the as above, so below, or the Oracle at Delphi saying, man, know thyself, and you will know the universe. You know, and that's pretty much the complete thesis of absolutely everything that my work is founded upon, is to try and understand the principles that really uphold this corrupt system that we are living in right now. You really have to understand what is corrupted within us, and you can only find that out in one way, by simple observation. So that is being that third force in the Trinity. That is being that intercepting line between the two forces. That's being the observer, taking a step back and actually, instead of identifying yourself and immersing yourself within the drama, which will eventually happen at times, but make sure, just like the breath, as you breathe out, you also breathe back in. And when you breathe back in, it's that expansion and contraction. When you remove yourself, you are being the observer, and you can then you can take all of the experiences that you had when you were immersed in the drama and really put them into a common understanding of how you are going to employ this new understanding tomorrow. And that's really the purpose of evolution, because right now we are stuck, our civilization is stuck in a state of chronic contraction, because we have forgotten the ability of letting go. In every manner whatsoever. This is the reason for obesity. This is the reason for cancer. This is the reason for a lot of the anxiety that we have today, and the need. You know, a lot of people blame the pharmaceutical company, all the pharmaceutical companies for making all these horrendous pharmaceuticals and also making up bogus ADD or, you know, other bogus illnesses just so they could sell more illness to us, really. But the thing is we're not just being sold illness, we're buying it. We are buying it. And the reason is because we are complicit. And as I was saying, we're in a state of chronic contraction on a whole society level. Our whole humanity right now is in a state of chronic contraction. This is a global thing, and we are not letting anything go. And again, as I said, the reason for obesity, because at a conscious level, if you look at the work of Dr. Bruce Lipton, we, you know, our cells respond to those concepts and those beliefs that we hold, that we cherish so much. So if we are never letting anything go, what's going to happen? Yeah, we're going to become obese. We're also going to be so contracted that we're not allowing the medicine, the natural medicine within our body to be able to locate and terminate cancerous cells, because all a cancerous cell is, it's a normal cell that has gone rogue from the central nervous system. It is no longer communicating with the central nervous system, so it just consumes, it consumes and consumes, and it spreads, then it goes to different areas, and it consumes, and it kills off all the life around there, and it consumes and consumes and consumes because it doesn't have that communication with the central nervous system to say, hey, you're satiated, stop consuming. Well, let's blow that out on a global scale. Look at humanity. What do? And this is a blanket statement, unfortunately, because there are some people who are really trying to combat this. But what is a typical statement that you could say of humanity? We're consumers. We never give back. We're depleting the topsoil. We our agriculture is completely out of whack. We have no idea how to grow our food anymore. We have no idea how to have a relationship with our food. Yet all we do is we consume, and we're indignant when we consume. We're not appreciative of what we do consume. We're not appreciative of the animals that give their lives so we could eat, of the plants that are giving their energy up so we could eat. We spread and we consume, and we spread and we consume, and we're killing off all the natural wildlife and the ecosystems around the planet. And it's not because we're evil. It's because we're ignorant. And I don't mean, obviously, you would know this and your listeners would know this, but when I say ignorant, I'm not talking about book smarts. I'm talking about that core link between our heart and the earth. We've lost that in some way, shape, or form. And that is why my work is really trying to show that, listen, we are really at a point, we are at a juncture in history right now where there's no more time to sit back and hypothesize about this. There's no more time to sit and talk about it.
Right.
Actual true work has to be done, or else, just look at the population right now. The population is skyrocketing. And the thing is you have two different sides, and you have people that are saying, because of the population increase and because of all that, that's why Al Gore and that's why the Rothschilds and that's why, all of these conspiracies abound about the reduction in population. But that doesn't detract from the fact that, yes, there actually is a problem with the population increasing. And it's not just the fact that we're going to run out of land and run out of this and run out of that. It's also the fact, because that's kind of not even – that's a moot point in my book. The point is, what is driving such a rapid population increase? Because not even just looking at the physical ramifications, I look beneath the surface and say, what is driving such a rapid, incredible, incredibly disgusting, I should say, increase in only one species at the expense of every other species?
Right.
That, to me, is cancer. That's cancer. And most people, I have to clear this up just in case people get really upset by saying that. I am not in any way, shape, or form stating that humanity is a cancer. I'm saying that we are behaving like a cancer.
Right.
And I have no qualms about saying that.
I agree with you.
Absolutely 100% back that up.
Yeah, and I'm in absolute agreement with you. And, the way that I phrase it is that humanity is in a barrel and we're going over Niagara Falls, and, it doesn't look like we're going to get out of the barrel before we head over the falls because no two people agree on what needs to be done, and you have so many factions arguing, and then you've got so many plans, and it seems that this situation on Earth is going to have to reach some kind of nexus point, either consciousness raising, or there's going to have to be some kind of coming together of some sort, where we just, realize our connection to one another and reignite our unity with the earth and with all things natural. And I'm hoping for that, and I work towards it, but it remains to be seen.
Right. Yeah. And what I really see in, when I look around, what I've been seeing mostly is the fact that something is shifting, something is changing within the hearts and minds of humanity.
Mm-hmm.
And regardless of whether from my human perspective, can I say that it is for the better or for the worse? I really can't say, because I've had to come to terms, and I bounce back and forth with this, because I also get into debates with people every now and then, with close friends, I should say, where every now and then I can't really tell where I stand, because I always I'll get into these modes where I really do feel that things need to shift in a certain direction that I feel would be beneficial for the human race. But then again, I always have to come back to the understanding that we are trying to have a human comprehension of a universal problem, something that is actually, it's working through us. We aren't necessarily, and I really truly believe this, we aren't necessarily controlling the problem right now. We have the ability to control the problem. We have the ability to control, how should I say it? We are right now in the passenger seat. We're not in the driver's seat.
Yeah.
And that's the way that I'd like to say it, because we have the ability to be in the driver's seat, but we're choosing not to. So right now, we are not actually creating this problem. And that's a very important point to understand. The problem is being created through us. And the reason why I get into this in my work about this being this fundamental duality, as you see it in nature, you'll have a tree. A tree is a form of order. This is kind of what I get into when I say agents or disciples of light and agents or disciples of dark. It's also agents of chaos and agents of order. A tree is a form of order. It is not the agent of order. Many, many, many agents of order worked in collusion together to bring about this beautiful, magnificent thing called a tree. And that is a reflection of the agents of order. The agents of chaos are just really the other end of the polarity. You know, if you have a magnetic north, you're going to have a magnetic south.
Yeah.
So the magnetic polarity to the agents of order are the agents of chaos. And when a tree falls down, what do you naturally see? You see fungus. You see different forms of bacteria, many different things that are introduced naturally by nature into that tree to break it back down in a catabolic process, to bring it back into the base elements so that it can grow back into a new form of order. And that is the basis of evolution. That is why things must die at certain points, because if everything that ever lived never died, then there would be no evolution. You can have little, you know, spurts of evolution or growth, I should say, within things that never die, but it would never truly revolutionize itself. That is the purpose of things dying. But understanding what death really is, death is just a transformation. And we hear about this all the time, but the living thing is not our body. Our body is not alive. Trees are not alive. They are being lived. We are being lived by something so much more within us. And it is us, but it is not our physical body. Mm-hmm. Or how should I say, it is not just our physical body. Our physical body is merely a reflection of that. You know, so let's say if what we truly are is the flower, then what it gives off is that fragrance. That is the body. And most people would try and look at that the other way. No, wait a minute. It's the flower, you know, which is the physical body, and it's the fragrance. I look at it this way. What we truly are on the inside is the flower, and the fragrance is that physical manifestation, that reflection of what we truly are.
Yeah.
And so what I'm getting at with all of this is the fact that I can't, from my human perspective, necessarily say that what is happening on this planet is negative or positive, good or bad, right or wrong, evil, indifferent, anything like that. I can't really say, because I'm only coming at it from, you know, me, Benjamin Joseph Stewart, you know, my perspective as, you know, a 27-year-old human living in America. That's pretty much all I can, you know, all I can surmise from this perspective. But there could be something much greater. So the thing that I try and impress upon others is there's only one way to find out, though. There's absolutely only one way to find out. We want answers to this, but I can't give any answers. That's actually the whole principle of all of my work, is to eventually not have to do my work anymore. because I would love it, you know, for it to come the day where people no longer need me in an interview, or no longer need a lot of these other researchers, you know, writing books or doing documentaries or anything like that, because yes. they're looking within to understand the principles of their lives.
Yes, absolutely. I'm with you on that one too. And you know, what's funny is I think that this, we're actually in kind of a transformation stage right now, and it's, some people call it an acceleration, that Carl Kellerman seems to believe that the, that we're about to, that the Mayan calendar ends in 2011, and so there may be some energy shifts that occur that we are not expecting. I'm sure that there's going to be a lot happening that we're not expecting, and you know, so, but we do seem to be in some kind of an acceleration, and it's, I see that, you know, words and language and the symbols that have been reversed and used for their opposite are no longer serving us, and we need to go deeper within and, again, recommunicate with the source and be able to communicate with one another in natural rhythms. And those have been distorted and used to, you know, throw us off our track, perhaps. And maybe this is all working out to the best, and it's an experiment. So I don't know. You could look at it a million different ways. But whatever way you look at it, it does seem to be coming to a head in the very near future. And if it doesn't, things the old paradigms and the old systems are literally breaking down.
Yeah.
They can't function anymore. The greed that's going on and the gobbling up of assets and the, you know, raping and pillaging and the murder and the wars, all of this stuff is, it's really gotten tired. And the people who do these things and are behind them, and the militarization, you know, the expansion of the military. I mean, what happens when everybody is part of the military, you know, and there are no other people? Well, I don't know. That doesn't seem like a very positive world to me.
Right, absolutely. Yeah, and it's not to go off into another tangent, but it's actually funny that you mentioned what happens when we're all a part of the military, because there's actually a lot of researchers that believe that what most of everything that we see today around us is in some way military or paramilitary workings. All courts, all tribunals, everything, you know, when you look in any court and there's a American flag with gold fringe around it, that's a military flag. And you look at most corporations and it's the same way. And that all really goes back to those secret societies. Because if you look at the military in and of itself, look at some of the terminology and some of the emblems they use. It's the same as those secret societies that go way, way back into the age of antiquity. So
there
definitely is a pressing problem, you know, that I see that can be remedied. It's just a matter of people actually finding it within themselves, it to be necessary for us to stand as one.
Yes, yes. And as you said, that I guess I could call it a battle between the agents of light and the agents of dark. And so apparently this is an age-old battle, because it's been written about for thousands and tens of thousands of years, and it seems to have started at the beginning of our known history. So apparently this has to finish itself out, or at least get some kind of resolution before things go on. But I can tell you, I'm not interested in living in the kind of universe that we've created on this planet, and taking our violence and our selfishness and our greed out into the universe. That just is an unacceptable method of expansion. And until we learn how to care about one another and connect and love everything that's alive, I don't see how we're going to survive these coming days. They're going to become very difficult for many people.
I agree.
Oh, I wanted to ask you, well, thank you. and I agree with everything you said so far. Before we get too late into the hour, I wanted to bring up something that I think might be a new project that you're working on. I noticed on one of your sites You mentioned the Hanged Man Project. It sounds like something out of the Tarot. Well, what is that? And tell us about that.
Well, absolutely, it is out of the Tarot. The Hanged Man card in the Tarot deck, the reason why I use that is I actually briefly touched base on its meaning without even really talking about the Hanged Man card. The meaning that I get from it is you have the Hanged Man. He's hanging upside down and in perfect, how should I say, equanimity. If you just look at his face, just suspended there, timeless, you know, and all of the change from his pockets falls away, all the coins in his pockets fall away from his pockets to the earth, meaning all the value that he originally placed on all of his perceptions and his beliefs and his dogmas fall away from him. For that moment in time, he is suspended, and he is seeing the world in the exact opposite way that he normally did, meaning he is challenged. It's a challenge for himself, because we place value on certain things. It doesn't matter what it is. It could be,
right,
you know, a certain type of food. It could be sex. It could be drugs. It could be our job, status, anything. I mean, actually, I can't say anything because it's everything. We place value on absolutely everything. And what is happening is the Hanged Man, for a brief moment, is suspended there, looking at the world exactly the opposite. And it's that moment of clarity that all of the value that he once placed on everything falls away from him, symbolized by the coins falling out of his pocket. So he is looking at the world with brand new eyes, and that is the alpha and omega of the observer. That is it. When you think about what it is to be the observer, it's merely relinquishing all of the fluff and all of the crap that we have stored within us and given it value and said, okay, this belief, I'm going to put it here, and I'm always going to associate these types of things with this. And then I'm going to have this over here. This is my negative, you know, file, and everything that happens negatively, I'll associate it with this, and I'll throw it in here, and that way I'll always have this duality within me, and it's constantly battling.
Mm-hmm.
What's happening is that that's the meaning behind the Tarot card. That's the meaning behind the Hanged Man and why I chose that name for the project. Now, the project is kind of interesting. It's still growing, and it's nothing right now as to what it will be within the next coming years, because I'm adding so many more things to it moment by moment. I've traveled around the world so far giving presentations and doing movie screenings and really just meeting people and getting out in the field and trying to also walk the walk rather than just talk the talk, because I've been learning so much from the people that I meet about permaculture, about law, about just absolutely everything. It's so interesting. So basically, just to wrap it up, the Hanged Man Project is a project that is going to be employing all the principles that I have in my work into any form of movement or anything out there where people actually have the ideal of trying to better humanity. So it is there to assist absolutely anybody and everybody as a tool, so it can be used individually or in entire organizations and groups. And it's getting, I can't say far too large, but it's getting definitely far too large for me to kind of handle on my own. That's why I have quite a few people around the world right now helping me with it.
Wonderful.
Yeah, so it's going very well.
Before we run out of time, I want to make sure that you mention your websites where all the listeners can find you, because you've got a couple of websites that they can check out and also order your films or watch them. So be sure and let everybody know where you can be reached.
Yeah, hangedmanproject.com is the one website, hangedmanproject.com, and then there's also talismanicidols.org. And I encourage everybody to watch the films. If you want to support the project or if you want to support my research, definitely buy a film. But remember that everything I do is for free online, and it will always be that way. So you can contact me through the contact information on the website, and I really do open up the forum for absolutely anybody and everybody to contact me with any information they choose or with, you know, with any questions.
Wonderful. And you also have one Esoteric Agenda, don't you?
Yes, esotericagenda.net. That's actually, okay. it's you can find that on talismanicidols.org.
Oh, okay, good, good. Well, and I highly encourage everybody to watch those films. And Ben, I just want to thank you for coming on the show and sharing yourself with us and inspiring us and spending time opening our worlds up to a larger one. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Again, thank you very much for having me. It's an honor.
All right. And you keep up the good work, and hopefully we'll talk in a few months.
Absolutely.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Bye-bye, everybody.
BBS Radio.
Hello, everybody.